CBS Mornings on this Wednesday. I'm Gail King.
I'm Tony DeCoppo.
And I'm Nate Burleson.
Ahead on the CBS Mornings On The Go podcast. Plus, baseball, it's back. We're talking right now on the eve of opening day, and Commissioner Rob Manfred will be in studio explaining the rule changes to baseball this year and why they're good for fans. I think he's right. And finally, Anthony Mason. He goes behind the scenes of the marvelous Mrs. Maisel as the stars say goodbye, saying ain't so, it's so, to the award-winning comedy. All that and more after these messages.
Hey, hey, Prime members, talking to you. You can listen to CBS Mornings On The Go ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Welcome back to CBS Mornings. Put me in, Coach. Tomorrow is opening day for the league. All 30 teams returning to action. And as Cranston just mentioned, fans may notice some big changes in how the game is played. I'm going to give you a little run through. First up, the pitch clock. Here's how it's going to work. Pitchers will have 15 seconds to set and deliver, 20 seconds when a runner is on base, and batters, they must be ready to hit by the time that clock reaches 8 seconds. Second, goodbye infield shift, good riddance. That means two players must be on either side of the bag in the infield. You can no longer move your infielders to the outfield or the other side of the infield to try to take away hits. And finally, the bases themselves are actually getting a little bit bigger, 3 inches on either side to be exact. And those changes altogether have one goal in mind, to add more action to the game, more hits, more stolen bases, and speeding up the pace of play. And they come as Major League Baseball celebrates record-setting revenue last year. And we are joined by the commissioner, Rob Manfred, to talk about all this. Thank you very much for being here, Commissioner.
Yay. Glad to be here.
This is an exciting day for me. I don't know about my colleagues over here, but we have to get them on the baseball train.
What you talking about,
what you talking about? These changes, I've seen them in preseason play. I think they're fantastic. I think they make the game quick and athletic the way I remember it being in the 80s and 90s, watching it on TV, jumping around on my couch at home. What was the impetus for you guys? When did you finally say, we got to do this? I don't care who's opposed.
Well, this was kind of a long-term project, but it began with fan research. We noticed the game was changing on the field. We went to our fans. We solicited their views. And it was a very clear indication from fans that they wanted a game with more action, better pace, less reliance on strikeouts and home runs, and maybe most important, focusing on the athleticism of our great players.
You've got unbelievable middle infielders in baseball that can do incredible things, but you've got the big data crunching telling everyone where to stand, and instead of letting a guy play, they just go stand on the spot and hold their glove up. And then the other thing that seems to have happened is pitchers are throwing so hard, which is amazing to watch. But when they have unlimited time to walk around and reload the cannon, no one hits it, and it's boring.
We think the changes work together in order to promote getting the ball in play, giving fans more action, less downtime in the game, and overall, producing a game that looks like the game that most of us grew up with. We don't think we're changing the game. We think we're restoring the game.
Yeah, Ricky Henderson, Ozzie Smith, those players of the 80s and 90s, I want that game back.
What's the reaction from the players? Number one, good on you for listening to fans who said something, because a lot of people think, well, you can feel the way you feel, but this is what we're going to do. So good on you for listening. What are the players saying to you about the change?
Our players have been amazingly positive about the changes.
That surprise you?
It did. I think change is difficult for players. You know, they've reached a pinnacle. You know, it's so hard to become a major league player. Any change causes uncertainty. Is it going to affect my performance? I think that as they've gotten used to the rules, they like the fact that the game moves along better, that there's more action. And, you know, we've tried to be receptive to their input and have made adjustments around the edges to deal with things that, frankly, only players would understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rob, I want to get your thoughts on the diversity in the game. There was a report in the early 90s that black or African-American players made up around 18%. Last year, that was all the way down to 7. And mm-hmm. it seems like that number is starting to get lower and lower. What do you believe is the main issue here? When you have black athletes that could be one hell of a baseball player choosing to go play other sports, sometimes a sport like football, that you might not last as long and you might face more criticism, might not make as much money, but they're walking away from a beautiful sport like baseball.
Well, our focus has really been on providing playing opportunities in places where they often were not available. We've invested heavily in youth programming and playing opportunities in underserved areas. And frankly, it's one of the best returns on investment anywhere in our business. Last year, for example, for the first time ever, 4 out of our first 5 draft picks were African American. Mm. And every single one of those draft picks came out of one of the programs that we're running around
wow.
the country. So it is a place where you can make a difference if you put some money into providing people with opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Baseball's got a Hall of Famer named Pete Rose, who is not a Hall of Famer because he gambled on his own team. And now legalized sports gambling has taken over pro sports. How is it changing the game of baseball?
Good question, Tony.
Are you worried?
It's a good question.
Well, I think that it's important that all of our rules are designed to make sure that sports betting doesn't change the game of baseball, that it can't have any effect on the play of the game on the field, and there are special rules that apply to players, employees, field managers. From a business perspective, there is a business there. We have a large data business that is significant. It's also significant in terms of sponsorship and other lines of our business.
Yeah, when Tony started, he was saying, you know, about Nate and I have sometimes thought it's a little dry, a little
dry.
Long.
This is the new improved baseball.
But I've actually been to games. I've actually been to games. And when you go to the park, the infield experience is really, really nice. I love the food. I love the camaraderie. It really is a good experience. I will say that. Marcus Stroman was here and he said, people that say baseball is boring, I look at them like they've lost their minds. Baseball is fascinating. If you know the game, you know that there's always something going on.
That's right.
You clearly love this game, too. Why?
I think baseball occupies a unique spot in our culture. There's something about the association that Americans have with our game that's special. And I do believe the game has characteristics that are really important to Americans. There's certain values embedded in it. Mm-hmm. You have to stick to it. It's a very hard game.
Teamwork.
It's a subtle game, teamwork. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I grew up a fan and probably
and
a bigger fan today than ever.
We have a countdown clock ready just for you, Commissioner.
Okay.
20 seconds on the clock. First thing that comes to your mind. Your favorite morning show? No. Favorite player of all time?
Mickey Mantle.
Ooh. Favorite ballpark food?
Hot dog. Easy.
Ooh. Favorite baseball memory?
Probably my first game, 1968, Yankee Stadium. Mickey Mantle hit 2 home
Ooh,
runs.
Wow. That's a good one.
Oh, that's great.
Back pocket.
If you were an MLB player, do you play, by the way?
I played Little League and was not very good, Gail.
If you were, what would your walk-up song be?
Thunder Sexy. Road. That's easy.
I'm Too Sexy from Thunderbird. Bruce Springsteen, you could never go wrong. And if you're having... That was my bad because I talked. I want you to answer this. If you have a dinner party, what 3 baseball people would you invite, dead or alive? Just
well,
3.
You know, Mickey Mantle's easy. I think Commissioner Landis, I think he'd be an interesting character. And it would have to be one of today's players, maybe Ken Griffey Jr.
Ooh, the kid!
Very nice.
Rob, you knocked it out the park.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Congrats.
You. Boy, believe it or not, this month marks 3 years since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a pandemic. And while cases and hospitalizations are down, the disease is still part of everyday life for many Americans, particularly those battling long COVID. CBS News medical contributor Dr. Celine Gounder met a patient whose life changed forever after her COVID diagnosis. Dr. Gounder joined her at a post-COVID clinic to learn the ways that doctors are helping these patients regain some normalcy.
Almost there.
For Trevor Taylor, most mornings start off like this.
one small step at a time.
Finishing strong, huh?
Yeah, let's finish strong.
It's been an uphill battle for the 57-year-old who told us her COVID diagnosis in January 2021 nearly killed her.
It was scary because I remember my eyes being open, but everything was black. I remember the nurse saying to me, you have to fight. The person next to you is dying, and if you don't, you're going to be in this body bag. You got to fight.
Taylor wasn't vaccinated at the time. She was rushed to the hospital on the same day that she was scheduled to get her first dose of the COVID vaccine. Since then, she's been out of work. And instead of driving to the hospital to her old job as an administrator, she makes the trip multiple times a week for physical therapy.
Go for 2-minute intervals if you can, and then just take a break. The timer will stop, all right?
I do my therapy. I come home. I can't move off the couch. So for me, I'm up and down like a roller coaster. 1 minute I breathe good, next minute I don't. And then when I have a lot of activity for a day, I can be down for 48 hours. Cannot get out the bed.
So the whole way up?
Taylor's become one of millions of Americans to experience long COVID. Her case so severe that she relies on oxygen to get around.
There you go.
Right here, my love. You did it. Home stretch. Look at you.
For 2 years now, she's been visiting NYU's post-COVID care program.
It's coming out my throat clear.
Where she and 1,000 other patients are treated by pulmonologists like Dr. Rainey Kondos.
They have what we call symptoms that are associated with their COVID infection, but are now lingering longer, and so long COVID. It is a major problem if you think of the fact that about 25% of patients may end up with long COVID. And if you're talking about millions and millions of patients, you can imagine that that's a large number.
Patients with long COVID commonly experience symptoms like fatigue, brain fog, shortness of breath, and chest pain.
Now let's compare Treva to other patients with long COVID. How is she similar or different from some of the other patients?
So she's fairly representative of the patients with severe COVID that we saw pre-vaccination during the early days of the pandemic. These other patients with long COVID didn't have severe COVID. They had a cold, and the cold got better. And then a few months later, they can't get out of bed. Most of the long COVID patients that we're seeing are those that were healthy and now have lingering symptoms.
Hush! Don't stop, don't stop, don't stop. Keep going. You got this, almost there.
One way to monitor those symptoms is through breathing tests, which Taylor receives every 6 weeks. While exhausting, the tool measures her lung function and tracks her improvement over time.
Easy, relax.
In what ways does being a patient in a program like this help patients heal?
Many of these patients were going to their primary care doctors, and their primary care doctors were telling them they were crazy and that there was nothing wrong with them and they should just go home and forget it. And they felt very unheard. And I think what we're trying to do is provide a place for them to be heard.
Hi, yes, I need to reorder oxygen for myself, please.
How many tanks you are requesting?
I'm requesting 4 tanks, too small, too tall.
Treva, what would you like people to know about long COVID?
I would like for people to understand that, first, long COVID is very real. It's not something that's in your head. It's not an imagination. Trust me, I would do anything not to be like this. Every day getting up is a fight. Every day to breathe is a fight. But it's worth the fight because I love people and people give me energy. And as long as I can show a fight, I know that there's a chance.
Taylor is in the process of being evaluated for a possible lung transplant, a clear reminder of the long-term effects of severe COVID. The good news for so many other patients is that COVID vaccination reduces the risk of getting long COVID by at least half, according to a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you point out in your piece, she was that close to getting the vaccine before she was diagnosed, right? This is when vaccines were first coming out.
Right.
Was she
right,
2 days?
January 2021, so yes. She's a hospital administrator. She has her appointment, and yes. She gets COVID just a couple days before her first shot.
If you do get long COVID, is it forever COVID, or will you eventually be kind of cured and normal again, whatever your life was before?
Well, in her case, she had such severe lung damage. I mean, that's why they're looking at giving her a lung transplant.
Oh.
So that's not a curable condition. That's permanent organ damage.
In general, can people who have long COVID, though, expect to recover?
Maybe. Some people are getting better with their symptoms over time, and we are looking at cures. There's a study right now looking at Paxlovid, the medication you use during a COVID infection, to see if it might also help treat long COVID.
Mm. All right, Dr. Celine Gounder and Vlad's daughter. Don't you think she has one of the prettiest names you've you've ever heard. Yeah, you do.
I agree.
More from this episode of CBS Mornings after this short break.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
This is what you came for. Yep. Welcome back to CBS Mornings. It's time to bring you some of the stories that are the talk of the table this morning. And who is going to start us off other than Gib?
I'm in pole position. Normally, for talk of the table, I always like to keep it light, something that brings me joy, something I think is fun and makes you smile. That's not how I'm feeling today. My talk of the table is actor Niecy Nash. She's reacting to Monday's deadly shooting, school shooting in Nashville. Why? Because Niecy lost her only brother to gun violence more than 30 years ago. He was shot and killed at his California high school. He was only 17 at the time. And here's part of what Niecy posted on TikTok.
In 1993, my only brother was killed on his high school campus because somebody brought a gun to school. It's 2023. And this baby's who would never make it home to see their parents. And those parents will forever be in a space, in a place where they are like, what was the last thing I said? What was the last lunch I made? What was their last thought, experience? Did they call out for me?
Yep, Niecy, she goes on to say, we are losing our way. She is a spokesperson for Mothers Against Violence in Schools. Her mother founded the organization after her brother's death back in 1993. And that's what struck me about Niecy's thing. It was so personal. We report these stories and we go on to the next thing, and people are still suffering all these years later. And I keep thinking about those families. We were talking about your kids' rooms are still there with all of their places in it. And I've come to the point, and it's very difficult to even think that we live in a country where apparently we value guns over children. We value guns over the lives of fellow human beings. And it's very hard for me to wrap my brain around that. If we didn't feel that way, we would do something about it.
I just think I take my kids to the playground in New York, and they put padding on the playground just in case they fall off the jungle gym. They don't want to get a bruise on your elbow. Think of the steps we take to ensure that our kids are safe, except around this one issue where we seem to have a block.
Guys, they're banning books in schools. Yeah. Books can't kill your children. They're banning some books in schools, but yet the rules are very different when it comes to guns. And it's just, we never want to take guns away from responsible owners.
Right.
That's not
right.
What we're trying to do here.
Right.
No,
but
assault rifles have no business in this society.
You think about the generations before this.
Yep.
We would practice fire drills, earthquake drills.
Yep.
And rarely, if ever, experienced one. Now kids today are practicing active shooter drills.
Yep.
And they are going through active shooting experiences.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, this is as real as it gets. And I love Niecy for doing that.
I do, too.
And giving us that raw emotion.
I do, too.
And I know at home you might be thinking that's a little heavy, But we should feel the weight of the world crashing down on us collectively as a country, because right now we are failing our kids. We are protecting these guns and not our kids. And like you said, we're not talking about responsible gun ownership.
Right, right, right.
We are talking about taking away some of these deadly guns that are ripping through our kids. And it's happening every so often.
I just pray, Nate, we don't become desensitized to it. And that's why I think it's important to point out stories like this, as hard as it is and painful as it is to see. I don't want us to become desensitized to what is happening in our world every single day. No, and we are.
I feel shredded by it as well. And to your point about the trainings, Katie and I, our big conversation yesterday was, okay, so we've got 3-year-old Teddy. He's having his first school experience, right? There were 3-year-olds in that school where the shooting happened. So now we have a conversation with the school about the drills or about what they're doing to prepare. But we actually don't want to confront the idea that he's going to go through this drill. He's a sensitive kid. I don't want it in his head thinking about what might happen when he's at the school. I want him focusing on the fun and the joy of learning.
But it's a harsh reality.
And now that's the reality that we're living in.
As I was at home watching CBS, and immediately I thought to myself, oh, another shooting has happened. This is what we'll be talking about in the morning. I usually would turn the channel because my 12-year-old daughter is right there. Let's turn to something lighter. I don't want her thinking about this. But I thought to myself,
let her see it.
She has to see it.
Let her see it.
Because it's what she's going through. Niecy. Nah,
yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Niecy.
All right, so my Talk the Table is our Changing the Game series, where we highlight extraordinary women making a difference now and for future generations. We continue our baseball theme this morning ahead of MLB opening day tomorrow. In recent years, women have made strides in the sport, taking on a number of high-profile roles. Now, as Meg Oliver shows us, one college athlete is making history on the diamond.
Watch out, boys of summer. There's a new kid in town, and she means business.
This was my goal throughout high school, to play collegiate baseball regardless of the division.
19-year-old Olivia Pichardo made history recently as the first woman to make a collegiate Division I baseball team, an outfielder for Brown University in the Ivy League.
I knew that I wanted to play college baseball, but I also wanted to go somewhere that had academics that fit the grades that I had in high school.
Pichardo chose Brown with a plan for a walk-on tryout.
She approached things with calm.
Grant Achilles is the team's head coach.
How many women have reached out to you to try and try out for your program?
There have been a handful since Liv, certainly none before.
She was the first?
Yes, she was the first.
How would you describe her as a baseball player?
So she's very meticulous with her preparation, and she's a contact hitter that wants to put the ball on the ground and play solid defense in the outfield.
The dusty baseball diamonds of Queens, New York have been a part of Pichardo's life as long as she can remember.
Who taught you how to play baseball?
It was my dad. I kind of inherited his love for the game, and he knew that he wanted his kids to play baseball.
So it all started here in Queens?
All right here, and this is the path that we took to the Little League field.
Olivia's dad, Max, grew up playing baseball in the Dominican Republic and was eager to share the sport with his kids. He got Olivia on the diamond when she was only 4. He still has her first bat, pink and yellow.
It looks so small now, but on the field way back there, where she said, when you're the littlest, she would come out to the plate and she would slam the crap out of the bat on the home plate.
Olivia became a pitcher and outfielder and was able to hold her own with older boys. As a 7th grader, she made the high school boys' varsity team.
That was always the thing that I look forward to. Like, oh, practice at the end of the day today. A game at the end of the day. I'm going to pitch today. I'm so excited.
While many girls take to softball, it was never a consideration for Pichardo. She graduated high school with a sizzling fastball and a sparkling GPA. And while Pichardo has always been a standout, she's also always found a way to fit in. Just ask her Brown teammates.
The first thing I was impressed by was just how she threw the ball. It's a good sign of just what a baseball player will be.
I was also impressed. I hadn't really played with any girls since Little League, and I was pretty excited to see what she could do out here.
As a freshman walk-on, Olivia wasn't guaranteed any playing time. But on March 17th, with Proud Papa filming from the stands, Pichardo became the first woman ever to bat in a Division I game. It was a ground out, but it was history.
What do you want other little girls out there to know that are playing baseball right now?
I guess I would tell them they should be playing the sport that they love for as long as they want to play.
And a little more for the history books. The helmet Pichardo wore during her first at-bat is now in Cooperstown, where it will be displayed at the National Baseball Hall of Fame Museum. And I talked to Olivia last night. She said it felt great to be up at the plate, but she treated it like any other at-bat experience.
Good.
Very humble, doesn't want the spotlight. She wants to focus on her teammates, the game, but she is proud she's making
She can play. You know, Nate, we talk about how you can tell in 1 second whether someone's an athlete, and you can see it in her.
Yeah, the first thing you said was, that's a great swing.
I like,
great
swing. I like the sound swing of that bat when she hit the ball. Go, Olivia.
Well,
thank you, Meg. Inside look at that acclaimed comedy series. I know you know it. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, the fifth and final season of the Emmy and Golden Globe-winning show, premieres April 14th on Prime Video. That's coming up. We will finally learn what happens to Miriam Midge Maisel, the mid-20th century New York housewife turned stand-up comic, found herself at a crucial crossroads at the end of last season. You remember that. As the cast of this beloved series wrapped filming and said their goodbyes, they invited Anthony, as in Mason, to join him on the set, first on CBS Mornings.
We're in Brooklyn now, and then we walk through this door, and we're in the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
That's right. This is the set. Welcome to my humble abode.
I have apartment envy.
So do I, honestly.
A visit to Midge Maisel's apartment is a trip back in time to early 1960s New York.
These candies may or may not have been here since the first season.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, would you like to try one?
That's okay. Thank you for offering.
In the final days of filming, Rachel Brosnahan,
oh, thank you, Mrs. Maisel,
who plays Midge Maisel, and Alex Borstein,
but that's $4,050 for you and $450 for me,
who plays her manager, Susie Meyerson.
This is our living room.
Gave us a tour of the set that would soon be struck.
Does it feel real to you in its own way?
It does after so many years.
Where the hell are we? What is this, Versailles?
It's my apartment.
Your table is set for 30. Who has cutlery for 30?
I know this apartment almost as well as I know my own.
That woman last night, she was not me.
Brosnahan was 26 when she won the part of the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It was a breakout role.
All of this goes in that mouth before you leave this seat, young man.
Playing a divorced Jewish mother who becomes a stand-up comic.
So my life completely fell apart today. Did I mention that my husband left me?
Woohoo!
People said you couldn't do comedy.
Yeah.
Well, obviously you proved them wrong.
I don't know. It depends on who you ask.
Am I supposed to find them intimidating? Because all I see is a lineup of men who had to go into comedy just to get laid.
Together, Midge and Susie take on the male-dominated world of comedy.
Okay. Let's kick some big-time comedy across all five boroughs. I'm making some calls tonight.
Your relationship is obviously critical to the show.
We always knew this was kind of the central romance of the show, the womance. She's had a marriage fail, but Susie remains and Midge remains. To me, it feels like the most important love story.
Another important love story.
This is the neighborhood.
This is our neighborhood. This is the Maisel neighborhood.
Midge's parents, Abe and Rose Weissman, played by Tony Shalhoub and Maren Hinkle.
We were worried, Miriam. Worried sick, if you must know.
Your mother vomited.
I did not vomit.
Well, she did something in the bathroom that took a very long time, and she did not come out looking happy.
We shot the pilot in this real apartment.
They reunited recently, after filming had ended, outside the building used for the exteriors of the Maisel apartment.
And here we are, home.
Oh. Here it is. Look at
that. I wish.
Very. Do you miss it?
Yes.
Incredibly.
Yeah. Do you?
Yes.
We even missed the set.
That set was the most beautiful home I'd ever had. And as we finished, I actually said, could you lock me up in it? And they didn't let me.
No. I asked them to lock you up in it.
So. Shirley's coming in. She might be naked.
She walks around the house naked.
We gotta go.
You two have one of my all-time favorite TV relationships.
Oh, thanks. There's nobody I would rather be working with in the world than this person. And there wasn't one moment of tension in all those years, unless you're not telling me, was there something that you felt? No, we literally delighted in the possibility of what we got to do every single day.
The show has taken Abe and Rose from Manhattan to Paris to a summer in the Catskills.
Ladies, welcome back to Steiner Mountain Resort, your home away from home.
Hi, Polly.
I want to know what your reaction was when you got the script that had the Catskills calisthenics scene in it.
My reaction was, I need to go on a diet.
Touchdown every morning. Times.
And you were in a romper, correct?
A romper, a one-piece workout.
A darling romper.
Yeah.
Did you get up there that day and just sort of like improv?
No, yeah, and I just making up these ridiculous things.
Touchdown, up, every morning, down, 10 times.
It was kind of liberating, and you know what I mean? I felt very courageous.
The climactic scene last season took place in Carnegie Hall, where Midge goes to watch her friend, Lenny Bruce, perform.
You should dig my point of view here, man.
What was it like to shoot in Carnegie Hall?
Well, I mean, you can imagine.
Yes.
Luke Kirby plays a fictional version of the real-life comic.
You as Lenny end up being kind of a grounding force for her and the North Star in a lot
yes.
of ways.
Yeah, they have a really tender, beautiful friendship. There's a kind of honesty that they're able to have because they're not committed to each other in any way. They're just committed to the same craft.
I hear you turned down the Bennett gig.
Yeah, I did.
When Midge turns down a shot at opening for Tony Bennett, Lenny lays into her.
Don't you want this? Don't you want to be here?
He has no other responsibility to her but to be totally honest.
If you blow this, Midge, I swear.
That's why that moment is so powerful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully she listens to him.
It's showtime!
We'll soon learn how the story ends. But the actors have already said their goodbyes.
How's that feeling?
It's not good.
It's not.
It's terrible.
It's not a good feeling. Everyone wants to say, is it bittersweet? I'm like, it's just kind of bitter right now. And I think we're just all aware that we're breathing rarefied air mm-hmm. when we're here, and you know, and we're gonna miss it. We're gonna miss each other.
I wish I could still do it.
You do?
Yeah, I never wanted to leave the character. She was the most delightful, and the people that we got to be. Did you feel that way when we finished?
Oh, totally.
It's
yeah,
just
totally.
It's heart-wrenching to not be in the world. So thank you for bringing us back here today.
With Abe and Rose, we took one last stroll through the Maisel neighborhood.
I don't want it to end.
Yeah, I agree.
They all come to an end. That's the problem.
Yeah, that is the problem. It was such a wonderful cast, and you can see how much they really love each other.
Yeah.
They also all love that set. Like, if anybody who watches that show has apartment envy and costume envy.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
You know, it's really extraordinary.
Yeah, their clothes. I was looking at
the
dress.
Writing is amazing. So many admirable parts about it.
Yeah, they make the actual comedy in the show, the stand-up, funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could work on its own.
For the time frame that it's in.
Yeah, but yes. Even for
it's
today,
genius.
You get it.
Yes.
I mean, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
It's like making the music good in a show about a band.
But,
right.
You know, it's sort of weird. It breaks my heart when I was sitting on that set and I thought, you know, in a few weeks, this will be gone. They'll take it down. And it's like, because it's so real to me.
Yeah.
I posted a picture on Instagram. I could have sat there all afternoon. Just serve me a bourbon. I would have been there all afternoon.
Anthony, I want Midge's yellow dress that you just wore. Could you please get it for me in a size 10?
I want Anthony Mason's giant blue umbrella.
I don't even know where
I
can.
I also love how you shot it, though, in all the different locations.
Really
how long
cool.
did it take you to do
we,
that?
We started shooting that when they were shooting their final scenes in October and November.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome job.
It's going to be missed,
cool.
that show.
All right, Anthony, thank you very much. And we do thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow in your feed and Monday through Friday on your local CBS stations starting at 7 a.m.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to CBS Mornings on the go ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
I'm CBS News correspondent Major Garrett, host of the podcast Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen. During the Cold War, FBI agent Robert Hansen traded classified secrets to the Kremlin in exchange for cash and jewels. In the podcast, you'll hear from Hansen's closest friends, family members, victims, and colleagues for the most comprehensive telling of who Robert Hansen really was. Binge the entire series now. Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen is available on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.